Pittsburgh's number one website is PostGazette.com. It's the online source for the region's most up-to-date news, sports, entertainment, business news, and more. When you want to know what's going on, visit PostGazette.com.
We felt pretty low, lying in bed that first night. It was so dark, so quiet, and so lonely. Karen started to cry. I tried to comfort her, but I wanted to cry too. What the hell were we doing here in a room 10 feet square?
From Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, this is Dennis Roddy's Journal, a look at life and the people who live it. I'm David Baer. And now, from the newsroom of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, here's Dennis Roddy's Journal.
Never heeds when we call. The centuries pass on, that is.
You're 55. You have a PhD in economics. You teach at a college. Around the 30-year mark, you look at your students and it's all very sad. They're not idealists out to change the world. They're consumers out to purchase it. They've just dropped in to buy a degree, not to hear your theories about economic justice. That can be someone else's job. One day your best friend dies. This is the same best friend who advised you to put your pension into stocks during the 90s. The same one who warned you when to get out. Suddenly, despite your good intentions, you're well off. You're a socialist and you're, well, if not rich, you're close enough to make your skin feel like a bad fit. Mike Yates did what a man like Mike Yates can do about this sort of thing. He taught at the University of Pittsburgh at Johnstown.
He and his wife, Karen Koronoski, lived in Pittsburgh.
One day they decided that living in a house wasn't such a big deal. The kids were grown and all working at restaurants, somewhere else. So Mike and Karen decided to see America. Maybe not so much see as inspect it for damage. First, they gave away everything but their clothes. They kept the car and Mike's laptop computer. One day they got in the car, pointed it west, and made a long probing loop around the USA. They lived in cheap motels and cooked on a hot plate. They collected all the information they could gather about how the country works, how people survive, how some of them don't, and why the place seems to be splitting apart. They became revolutionary tourists. This is their travelogue.
Heights, leave us alone and you'll see how we can drag down the stakes. Yes, it is true, we are not strong.
How did you decide to give everything away and just take off?
Well, I think people have too many things, and I just didn't like that. And I thought, if you're really going to make a break with your past and start a new life, which is what we wanted to do after 32 years of teaching and then raising the kids and everything, and I thought we wanted to live a lot more mobile life, then you just can't have a lot of possessions with you. So I never was very attached to them, and Karen was never very attached to them. I don't think we really ever cared much about them. And I've always given away a lot of things in the past. We both have. So we figured, let's just give it all away. Then we won't have to worry about it anymore.
A brief history of Mike Yates. He was raised in Ford City. That's a small glassmaking town in the fringe of Pittsburgh's orbit. It's a place where industrial heartland returns to Appalachia. He still has the accent. After college, Mike landed a job at the University of Pittsburgh's Johnstown campus, and that's where he met Bruce Williams, a New England transplant and fellow radical. For 30 years, they were the Mutt and Jeff of campus politics. They tried to unionize the faculty, helped the custodians do the same, worked with local labor groups. It was Bruce who pointed out to Mike that their pensions could be invested in stocks. They made a killing in the go-go 90s, and Bruce later warned Mike the balloon was going to burst. They got out just in time. Who would know more about how to work the capitalist system than the people who wanted to take it apart? Then, not long before Mike left, Bruce died.
So what happened,
he doesn't dwell on that loss.
For a long
just
time,
heals.
It still happens sometimes. I'll do something and say, boy, Bruce would like to know about that. I'd like to call him on the phone. And then I remember he's dead, so I can't call him. So I don't think his dying had really anything to do with that. It was just one more bridge that was cut.
Another bridge was falling as well, one between teacher and student. For years, UPJ was a working-class campus. That was changing, and with it, so were the students.
They tended to feel entitled to a degree without much effort. A college diploma was seen as a commodity, and I was there more or less to see to it that their purchases went smoothly.
The sale ended 6 years ago. Mike took early retirement. They gave him a dinner. A few speeches were offered. Then he got in the car and began driving Route 22, west.
...of much of western Pennsylvania. Jean and Boots Candy Shop, Dick's Diner, Dean's Diner, Zoila's Western Diner, Country Kitchen with Broasted Chicken, Dairy Queen's, Crest Nursing Home, Spar Nursing Home, 7-Elevens, car dealerships, a strip mine, the Cheese House...
For the next 5 years, Mike and Karen would travel around the country. They'd go to New Mexico, Arizona, Oregon, a switch back to Manhattan, then Colorado. He became a commodity. The first job was at Yellowstone National Park. Mike found a job at a lodge there. He was a desk clerk. Karen waited tables in the restaurant. They got a tiny room, uniforms, stress.
Taken up by the water heater, though we never had enough hot water for more than one of us to get a shower. The sink was next to the bed, so close that you could sit in bed and brush your teeth. We felt pretty low, lying in bed that first night. It was so dark, so quiet, and so lonely. Karen started to cry.
Before they opened for business, Mike and other employees were brought to a group meeting to tell a little about why they were doing what they were doing here.
I astonished myself by almost tearing up and saying that I hoped to prove to myself that I could do something besides what I had done for 32 years, and was looking forward to working as part of a team. I still can't believe I did that.
In time, Mike and Karen could feel the rules of work closing in on them. The place was understaffed. Mike read this as a clear calculation by the company that ran the inn. Now downtime meant the staff had to rely on one another. If someone eased up on his job, co-workers would do the discipline for the company, or else they'd have to pick up the extra work themselves. Employee meals were mediocre affairs served on trays. Not on plates sitting atop trays, but slopped right onto the tray itself. Mike and Karen bought paper plates. One co-worker chided them. It wasn't environmentally friendly. When the time came to leave, Mike and Karen got to see a few of the sights.
Cody is named for Buffalo Bill Cody, the Western hero and huckster. The main street of the town is filled with shops selling Western paraphernalia and American Indian art. Buffalo Bill's legend still permeates the town, and the hotel he built, called the Irma for his daughter, still stands. It's the site of a nightly shootout among fake cowboys. The cowboys were scruffy characters who sometimes looked much the worse for wear from drinking too much. Each summer night at 6 they put on a show, which always ended in an orgy of gunfire, with people falling down dead, sometimes after dropping from the Irma's balcony.
What Mike and Karen discovered about America is this. We grow up being told it's a collection of infinite wonders. We're told about its varied cultures, almost impossible to see in one lifetime. But they notice the mean sameness creeping into the place.
So wherever I go in the country now, I think if I always say, if you blindfolded me, I wouldn't know if I were in Santa Fe, I wouldn't know if I was in Portland. It's all the same. The sameness is really devastating to me.
In New Mexico, Karen got a revelation about the farolitos, the little Christmas lights. They aren't what they seem.
The lights that they string. Well, I thought they were going to be paper bags of farolitos. They put little tea candles in them. Well, this is what I expected. A paper bag with a little tea candle in, held down by sand. And that was all the pictures I've ever seen. And we were there, and what they are, they're electric plastic devices that every building has, is lined with.
In Arizona, they walked the canyons outside Sedona. There, the boundless red rock trails led into a wall. A resort had sprung up in the desert and staked out its turf with a sign unique in its belligerence. Private property, it said. Hikers notice. You must exit Boynton Canyon on this trail. Trespassers will be prosecuted. Armed patrol on duty 24 hours. Videotaping in progress.
Here the oppressiveness of private property revealed itself. We looked up at the surveillance camera and made obscene gestures.
In Portland, Mike and Karen followed the adventures of an anarchist who opened his own business. When his comrades joined a union, he cried foul.
Working class perspective. A well-known and respected anarchist, notorious among the city's business elite for his bold environmental initiatives, opened an organic food restaurant with fanfare and talk about collectivity. It wasn't long before he began to act like a typical employer, interested in cutting costs and controlling the workers. When the staff affiliated with the Industrial Workers of the World, still around these many years after the famous strikes in Lawrence, Massachusetts and Paterson, New Jersey, the owner denounced his former comrades as selfish and not interested in building an alternative community. I thought, if an environmentalist anarchist couldn't champion workers, who could?
Miami was maybe the starkest reminder that the money of the rich doesn't do much for the poor. It was a city of glamour, $1,000 hotel rooms, parties in rich hotels, while the poor slept on the beach.
During our first week, we saw a homeless woman bathing herself with a bar of soap in the ocean. Every morning, men would be curled up on the beach, warming their bodies in the bright sun. Outside, the raucous party hosted by the Estefans, the homeless tried to sleep. Across the bay in Miami City, a woman in an expensive car hit a child in a poor neighborhood. Instead of stopping, she threw a $50 bill out the window.
Dr. Yates and Nurse Koronowski had taken in the country. What they discovered was that the country itself had been taken in. Income inequality, fake anarchists, wild canyons walled in for profit, the rich luxuriating in swanky hotels while the poor washed in the surf until they got run over. There was only one place to turn for answers. Academia. Sure, it had let him down once, but this time Mike was invited to speak to Academia with a capital A. We're talking Ivy Leagues. Columbia University had him to a seminar to talk about full employment. Maybe some of his students had become grasping and dense in later years, but this was New York City, where speech is free and ideas flow. He and Karen were summoned to the faculty house at Columbia to share a meal alongside great thinkers.
I walked through the great university's gate at Broadway and 116th Street with some trepidation. I had never spoken at an Ivy League university, and I wondered if the group's participants would be as brilliant as I sometimes imagined people at such schools were. We met the person who had invited me, a friendly elderly man of some renown. The first thing he did was inform me that I would have to pay for my wife's dinner.
Earlier that day, Mike and Karen had visited the offices of Wing Lam. He's a union organizer in the Chinese immigrant community. His job is to make employers follow very basic rules, like pay their workers. The day they stopped in to visit Wing, his office had just been firebombed. He took them out to lunch, and he paid.
We went to lunch in Chinatown at a place where, you know, we were the only non-Chinese people. He ordered and paid for our lunch. You know, this is a guy representing the poorest of the poor, people working 100 hours a week, $2 an hour. Then I go to Columbia University. It is a really posh place. You know, the professors are making a lot of money, and we go to dinner there, and I'm the featured speaker, and Karen's with me, and they say I have to pay for our lunch.
And quite a meal it was. Wooden tables, linen napkins, fine china, a view overlooking the slums of East Harlem. This was no Yellowstone employee meal slopped onto a bare tray.
Everyone was white except the servers. The conversation revolved around trips these elite academics had taken and the research they were doing.
Conversation turned to children.
We silenced the polite chatter when we said that our three sons were cooks. Apparently no one could believe that a college professor had children who did such work.
The evening ended on an intellectual note. They were all dragged to some professor's house to watch a TV show about the overboard spending habits of the American. Mike was given a half glass of cheap beer. He and Karen sat through long-winded comments. Then they got up and left. Maybe it's just me, but in reading Mike's account, I get the feeling he was glad to go. Home.
As we walked out the door, we heard one person remind another that she owed a dollar for the short cab ride from the college to the apartment.
Mike and Karen ended up in Estes Park, Colorado. They rented a home. He wrote a book. It's called Cheap Motels and a Hot Plate. It has a lot of lessons in it, even a few recipes. I think the chief lesson is that when the revolution comes, it won't be staying at the Ritz-Carlton, and it won't be wearing a professor's gown. That's the journal for this month. The soundtrack was the incomparable Billy Bragg from the album William Bloke. I'm Dennis Roddy. Tune in again.
Tune in again to PostGazette.com for the next episode of Dennis Roddy's Journal. For the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, I'm David Baer.